Perula looked at Li Chi, and, with eyes accustomed to the darkness, saw that her son was safe. She reached inside her cage for another tiny black bat. She could hear it fluttering against the bars. Holding the creature gently in her hands, she stroked the downy fur of its little body. Suddenly, with a murmur of alarm, two of the Fremen women made warding signs at the sky with their hands. Farula lifted her head to look up, and, in surprise, released the squirming bat before she was ready. On black wings, it soared off into the shadows in search of insects. Overhead, against the stars, Li Chi saw a bright cluster of lights, hot and blue, descending closer. Ships. Immense ships. His mother grabbed the boy roughly by the shoulders, while the Fremen women broke open the door seal and rushed back inside, hoping the mountain walls would offer a small measure of safety. Stranded in his Karthag garrison, Baron Harkonnen realized the fate that hung over his head. And he could do nothing about it. No communications, no spaceships, no short-range vehicles, no defenses. He smashed furnishings and threatened his aides, but nothing helped. He bellowed up at the sky, "Damn you, Shaddam!" But the Imperial flagship could not hear him. He had grudgingly expected to pay heavy fines and penalties for the discrepancies those maddening Choam auditors had discovered. If the charges were serious enough, he had feared that House Harkonnen might lose its Cyrodar fief on Arrakis and subsequent control over spice harvesting operations. There had even been a slim but terrifying chance that Shaddam might order the Baron's summary execution, as another lesson to the Landsraad. But never this. If those warships opened fire, Arrakis would become a charred rock. Melange was an organic substance, of mysterious derivation in this environment, and surely it could not survive such a conflagration. If the Emperor went through with this insanity, Arrakis would be of little interest to anyone, no longer even on Highliner routes. By the hells, there would be no Highliner travel at all, anywhere. The whole Imperium depended on spice. It made no sense. Shaddam had to be bluffing. The Harkonnen Lord remembered the blackened cities of Xanavar, and knew the Emperor was capable of carrying out his threats. He had been shocked at Shaddam's response against Richiz's laboratory moon, and he had no doubt that the Emperor had been behind the botanical plague on Baikal. Was the man insane? Undoubtedly. With his transmission systems obliterated, the Baron was incapable of even pleading for his life. He could not cast the blame on Rabban, and Peter de Vries remained on Kaitane, out of reach, probably relaxing in luxury. Baron Vladimir Harkonnen was all alone, facing the Emperor's wrath. "Stop!" The Guild Legate's booming voice was amplified by a full order of magnitude. The Supreme Bashar actually hesitated. "I don't know what game you are playing, Shaddam." The Legate's pink eyes were hot with malice. "You dare not damage Melange production to salve your petty pride. The spice must flow." Shaddam sniffed. "Then perhaps you need to enact a few new austerity measures. And unless you cease this open defiance of Imperial rule, I shall take punitive measures against the Spacing Guild as well." "You are bluffing."
"Am I?"
Shaddam stood up from his command chair and glared at the image. "We are not amused." In the clustered highliners over Arrakis, the appalled guildsmen must be scrambling. Turning calmly to Garon, the Emperor barked, "Supreme Bashar, I gave you an order." The Legate's image wavered, as if with shock and disbelief. "This course on which you embark is beyond the right of any ruler, Emperor or not. Because of it, the Guild henceforth withdraws all transportation services. You and your fleet will not be given passage home. Shaddam felt a stab of ice. You would never dare. Not after you hear what I... The legate cut him off. We decree that you, Padishah Emperor Shaddam IV, are now stranded here, the king of nothing more than a wasteland, accompanied by a military force that has nowhere to go and nothing to fight. You decree nothing. I am the... He stopped as the hollow image of the legate faded, and the comm system filled with static. All communication has been cut off, sire, Garonne reported. And... Re-establish contact. Trying, Your Majesty, but they have it blocked. Shaddam saw one of the highliners above them disappear as it folded space. The Emperor was bathed in perspiration, drenching his ceremonial uniform. This was one scenario he had not envisioned. How could he make promises or issue ultimatums if they severed communications? Without a way to send messages, how could he win back their cooperation? How could he and then convince the Landsrad to gather a military force against him? They would gladly install someone else on the Golden Lion throne. After all, House Corino only had daughters as heirs. On the comm screen, a second highliner disappeared, followed by the remaining three. Nothing but empty space remained overhead. In a state of near panic, Shaddam felt the overwhelming immensity of the situation. He was far from Kaitain. Even if the technicians with him could cobble together a means of traveling through space with pre-guild technology, he and his forces would not arrive back home for centuries. Supreme Bashar Garon's expression turned hard. Our forces are still ready to fire, Your Majesty. Or should I instruct them to stand down? If they were all stranded, how long would it be before the disenfranchised Sardaukar troops banded together in a mutiny? Shaddam raged at the dead comm screen that had linked him with the guild representative. I am your emperor! I alone decide policy for the Imperium! No answer came. No one was even there to hear. The natural destiny of power is fragmentation. Padishah Emperor Idris I, Landsrad Archives. In the skies above Ix, space itself shimmered, then opened to reveal an armada of more than 100 guild highliners, called from all across the Imperium, including the 5 highliners Shaddam had taken to Arrakis. The magnificent vessels overshadowed the forests, rivers, and craggy ravines on the Ixian surface. Smoke from the destruction in the subterranean battlefield below curled out of emergency purification vents. For the huge ships, it was a return home, since every one of the vessels had been constructed here, most of them under the supervision of House Vernius. Underground, the surviving Sardaukar, the strongest fighters, had taken last-stand defensive positions, back-to-back, near the center of the cavern grotto, with no intention of surrendering. The frenzied Imperial soldiers would make the new conquerors pay dearly for victory. Surrounded by Atreides' guards, the captive Count Hasimir Fenring looked self-satisfied, as if he felt that he alone maintained control of the situation. I am a victim, I assure you. As Imperial Spice Minister, I was dispatched here by the Emperor himself. We had heard rumors of illegal experiments, and when I discovered too much, Master Researcher Agitica tried to kill me. I'm sure that is why you greeted our arrival with such enthusiasm, Duncan said, holding up the old Duke's notched sword. I was frightened, All the Imperium knows the ruthlessness of Duke Leto's soldiers. Duncan's men glared at the Count, as if they wanted to arrange for Tleilaxu medical experiments on Fenring himself. Before Duncan could respond, a signal rang in his comm ear. He pressed a finger to the transceiver and listened. His eyes widened at the news. He smiled at Fenring without explanation, then turned to Romber. "The Guild has arrived, Prick. Many Highliners are in orbit around Ix."
"Kater's message," Prince Romber said. "They heard him."
Before Fenring could manage another thin excuse, the air within the grotto rumbled. A clap of thunder like a world exploding cracked through the cavern. Above the huge open area where the Sardaukar were making their final stand, the fabric of the air stretched and tore. A Highliner appeared where there had been only empty space moments before. The sudden displacement of such a huge volume of atmosphere sent an overpressure wave like a storm through the grotto, knocking people back, throwing them against the stone walls. Without warning, the huge vessel was simply there, hovering on suspensors, barely 2 meters above the ground in the center of the grotto. The ship struck down some of the rallied Sardaukar directly beneath it and scattered the rest, effectively rendering the last Imperial soldiers helpless. For Romber, the sight brought back memories of years past, when he and young Leto, along with the Pilru twins and Kylia, had watched the departure of a newly constructed Dominic-class Highliner. The navigator had simply folded space and piloted the ship away from the Ixian underground, out into the open universe. The reverse had occurred just now. The Highliner had been returned by a talented steersman piloting the ship with such precision that he could direct it with pinpoint accuracy to a location in a large bubble within the crust of the planet. Silence fell after the awe-inspiring arrival of the giant vessel. The scattered clashes of swords went quiet. Even the rioting suboids ceased their shouting and destruction. Then the Guild commandeered the grotto sky speakers, and a deep voice boomed out, leaving no room for doubt. "The Spacing Guild celebrates the victory of Prince Romber Vernius on Ix. We welcome a return to normal machine production and technological innovation." Standing beside Gurney and Duncan, Romber looked up at the great ship as if he couldn't believe the words he had just heard. It had been so long. More than his lifetime, it seemed. Tesha would find her own place here, too. The smug and confident look on the face of Count Hasimir Fenring had dissolved. Now the devious spice minister simply looked defeated. Brutality breeds brutality. Love breeds love. Lady Anirul Corino, Journal Entry. A dead guard, his uniform soaked with blood from a stab wound in his side, lay across the corridor on one of the lower levels of the palace. Leaving the latest victim to the men behind him, Duke Leto jumped over the slain soldier and ran faster, knowing he must be close to the person who had taken his son. He walked through a spreading pool on the floor and left diminishing red footprints as he rushed on. He drew the jeweled ceremonial dagger from his belt, with every intention of using it. In a chamber in the princess's study and play area, he found another corpse, a Bene Gesserit. Just as he was trying to identify her, two Sardaukar beside him let out stunned gasps. Leto caught his breath. It was Lady Anirul, wife of Emperor Shaddam IV. Reverend Mother Mohiam, also wearing black robes, appeared in the doorway. She looked at her fingers, then down at the waxy face of the dead woman. "I arrived too late. I could not help her. I could salvage nothing." With a clatter of boots and equipment, several men in Leto's squad fanned out to search nearby rooms. Leto stared, immediately wondering if Mohiam herself had murdered the Emperor's wife. Mohiam's bird-like eyes flicked across the faces of the men, recognizing their questions. "Of course I did not kill her," she said, with firm conviction and just a touch of voice. "Leto, your son is safe." Looking across the room, he saw the baby, wrapped in blankets on a cushion. The Duke stepped forward, his knees weak, surprised at his own hesitation. The newborn was red-faced and alert. He had wisps of black hair like Leto's own, and a chin reminiscent of Jessica's. "Is this my son?" "Yes, a son," Mohiam responded in a flat, somehow bitter tone. "Exactly what you wanted." He didn't understand what she meant by her tone, but didn't care. He was just happy to have the child safe. He picked up the baby, cradling it in his arms, remembering how he had held Victor. "I have another son." The child's bright eyes were open wide. "Support his head." Reaching out, Mohiam adjusted the baby in Leto's arms. "I know well enough how to do it." He remembered Kylia telling him the same thing after the birth of Victor. His heart wrenched at the thought. "Who was the kidnapper, did you see?" "No," she said without the slightest hesitation. "He fled." Gazing down the bridge of his nose at the Reverend Mother, Leto asked in a suspicious tone, "And how is it that my son came to be here and the kidnapper conveniently escaped? How did you find the baby?" The robed sister looked suddenly bored. "I found your boy on the floor here beside the body of Lady Anirul. Do you see her hands there? I had to pry her fingers loose from the child's blankets. Somehow she saved him." Leto looked at her, not believing. He noted no blood on the blankets or marks on the baby. One of the Sardaukar came up and saluted. "Sorry to interrupt, sir. We have located the Princess Irulan, and she is unharmed." He pointed toward the adjacent study room, where a guard stood beside the 11-year-old girl. The guard made clumsy attempts to comfort Irulan. Wearing a dress of alternating brown and white damask with the Carino crest on one long sleeve, Irulan was visibly shaken. But she seemed to be dealing with the tragedy better than the guard was. How much had she seen? The princess looked at the Reverend Mother with an impenetrable Bene Gesserit expression, as if the two of them shared one of the sisterhood's damnable secrets. Her beautiful young face, a stiff mask, Irulan walked into the chamber, as if the milling guards were not even there. "It was a man. He wore a Sardaukar disguise and makeup on his face. After killing my mother, he ran. I could not see his features well." Leto's heart went out to the Emperor's daughter, who stood as motionless as one of the many statues of her father. He thought she showed remarkable poise and cool-headedness. Though clearly shocked and filled with sadness, she maintained control of herself. Irulan stared down at her mother's body as one of the guards covered it with a gray cloak. No tears came to the girl's bright green eyes. Her classically beautiful face could have been an alabaster sculpture. He knew the feeling well, a similar lesson his own father had taught him. Grieve only in private moments, when no one can observe you. Irulan's eyes met Mohiam's, as if together they were erecting battlements. The princess seemed to know more, something she kept between herself and the aging Reverend Mother. Leto would probably never know the truth. "The criminal will be found," the Duke vowed, holding his son closer. The guards spoke on their comm units and continued the search throughout the palace. Mohiam looked at him. "Lady Anirul gave her life to save your son." Her expression became pinched, resentful. "Raise him well, Duke Atreides." She touched the baby boy's blankets and pushed him against Leto's chest.
I am sure Shaddam will not rest until he sees justice done to the man who killed his wife.
She stepped back, as if dismissing him.
Go, see your Jessica.
Reluctant and suspicious, but recognizing his priorities, Leto proudly carried the infant out of the chambers and headed back to the birthing room, where Jessica awaited him. Irulan looked steadily at Mohiam, but not even a hand signal flickered between them. Unknown to anyone, even Mohiam, the princess had hidden behind a slightly ajar door and watched her mother sacrifice herself for the sake of the newborn baby. She was amazed that such a powerful and reserved woman had placed so much importance on this Atreides infant, born of a mere concubine. What possible reason could there be? Why is this child so special?
War has destroyed mankind's finest specimens in the past. Our aim has been to limit military conflict in such a way that this does not occur. War has not, in the past, improved the species. Supreme Bashar Zoom Garon, Classified Memoirs. Despite the day's momentous victory, Prince Romber Vernius knew that many years of struggle remained ahead in order to effectuate a complete restructuring of Ixion society. But he was up to the task.
"We'll bring in the best investigators and forensics experts," Duncan said, looking at the still smoldering wreck of the laboratory complex. "The ventilation is clearing the air, but we still can't go inside the research pavilion. After the fire goes out, they will comb through every ash for evidence. Something must be left. And with any luck, it will be enough to bring Count Fenring and the Emperor to justice."
Romber shook his head, holding up a prosthetic arm and looking at the ragged wrist stump. "Even if we are completely victorious here, Shaddam may find some way to worm out of his guilt. If he has that much at stake here, he will try to manipulate the Landsrat against us."
Duncan gestured toward the dead who lay all around, and at white-uniformed Atreides medics who were tending to the wounded.
"Look how many Imperial troops have been killed here. Do you think Shaddam can ignore it? If he cannot cover it up, he will not."
"Nevertheless, House Atreides has taken military action against the Emperor's soldiers," Gurney said. "Unless we can find some way to turn this against him, Caladan may be forfeit."
Stranded and helpless over Arrakis, outraged that his plans had been ruined, and his imperial presence humiliated before all the Sardaukar, Shaddam issued the most difficult order he had ever given. With jaw clenched and lips curled, he finally turned to old Zoom Garon.
"Tell the fleet to stand down." He drew a deep breath, narrowing his nostrils. "I rescind the order to fire."
As the Imperial warships drew away from the planet into a higher orbit, he looked at his bridge officers in search of a solution. The Sardaukar remained expressionless, but Shaddam could tell that they blamed him for their situation. Even if he landed on the desert planet's surface, the Emperor would meet only with disdain from Baron Harkonnen.
"I am being made into the laughingstock of the Imperium."
After an uncomfortable silence, he cut off any questions from the officers by snapping, "Await further orders." In the end, they waited a full day. All communications systems on Arrakis remained non-functional. Although the Sardaukar fleet could still use its ship-to-ship transmitters, they had no one but themselves to talk to. Marooned. He locked himself in his private cabin, unable to believe what the Guild had done to him. At any second, he expected the Guild fleet to return so they could see how contrite their Emperor had become. But with the passage of each hour, his hopes began to wane. Finally, when he was certain the Sardaukar were on the verge of revolt, a single Highlander returned, appearing high above the huddled Imperial warships. Shaddam had to restrain himself from shouting curses at the vessel,
or demanding that the guild return him to Kaitain. Every defense or argument that came to mind sounded childish and weak. And so he let the guild speak first, to make their demands. He hoped he could tolerate their requirements. The bottom cargo hatch of the Highliner cracked open, and a single ship descended. A message came to the bridge of the flagship. "We have dispatched a shuttle to retrieve the Emperor. Our representative will bring him back to this Highliner, where we will continue our discussions." Shaddam wanted to rage at the legate, to insist that no one, not even the Spacing Guild, was in a position to demand his appearance at a meeting. Instead, the humiliated ruler swallowed hard and tried to sound as imperial as possible. "We shall await the arrival of the shuttle." The Emperor had just enough time to change into formal scarlet and gold robes, applying all the trappings and badges of office that he could locate on short notice, before the shuttle arrived. He stood in the landing bay to greet the shuttle, a regal figure that should have made entire populations tremble. Uncomfortably, he thought of long-forgotten Mandeus the Terrible, whose dusty tomb was hidden in the imperial necropolis. He was utterly astonished to see Hasimir Fenring step out of the small guild ship and gesture him aboard. The Count's expression warned him not to say a word. At the Emperor's side, Supreme Bashar Garon stood waiting, as if expecting to accompany Shaddam as a personal bodyguard. But Fenring motioned the old veteran back. "This will be a private meeting. I'll see what I can do to talk the Emperor and the Guild through this, Shaddam seethed with rage and embarrassment, and knew the worst was yet to come. When the shuttle departed again, the two sat in comfortable chairs, gazing through large portholes at a star-studded universe. For 10,000 years, House Corino had ruled this vast realm. Below them, the cracked brown globe of Arrakis looked austere and ugly, a wart in an empire of jewels. Shaddam suspected their conversation on board would be recorded by eavesdropping guild spies. Knowing that, Fenring spoke in code, using a private language the two friends had developed as boys. "Everything on Ix is a disaster, sire, and I see you haven't done any better here." He rubbed his chin thoughtfully. "Ajitika deceived us, as I said he would, What about the Amal? I tasted it myself. All the reports told me it was perfect. The master researcher, my Sardaukar commander, even you." "That was a face dancer, sire, not me. Amal is a total failure. Test samples caused the two recent Highliner accidents. I myself watched our master researcher die in convulsions from an overdose of the substance." Shaddam's head jerked back involuntarily, and all color drained from his face. "My God, when I think of what I almost did to Arrakis!" "Amal poisoned your Sardaukar legions on Ix too, hindering their ability to defend us against the Atreides attackers."
"Atreides? On Ix? What?"
"Your cousin Duke Leto has used his military to restore Romber Vernius to the Grand Palais. The Tleilaxu and your Sardaukar have been completely overthrown. In any event, I destroyed all of our research and production facilities. No evidence remains to implicate House Corino." Shaddam purpled, unable to comprehend how completely he had been defeated.
"Let us hope.
By the way, you will have to inform your Supreme Bashar that his son was killed in the fighting."
"More disasters."
The hawk-faced Emperor, looking haggard and weary, groaned.
"So there is no spice substitute? Nothing?"
No, not even a remote possibility." The Emperor sank back in his chair and watched the Highliner grow huge in front of them. Fenring showed obvious disgust.
If you had succeeded in your foolhardy plan to devastate Arrakis, you would have brought an end not only to your reign, but to the entire Imperium. You would have thrown us back to pre-jihad space travel. His voice took on a scolding tone, and he extended a finger. I have warned you time and again not to make such decisions without consulting me first. It will be your downfall.
The Highliner swallowed the tiny shuttle like a whale eating a single krill. No guild representative came to receive the Padishah Emperor, nor did anyone escort him from the shuttle. While he and Fenring sat alone, waiting for contact, the navigator activated the Holtzman engines and folded space, taking the disgraced ruler back to Kaitain, where he would face the consequence, in some circumstances, through time. Earl Dominic Vernon, anything but anger, Shaddam Carino IV watched the conclusion of the bastard he cursed under his breath. Behind the closed doors of the Emperor's private office, Kamar Pilru waited for Shaddam to comment. The Ixian ambassador had seen the oration numerous times, and still it wrenched his heart. Shaddam, though, remained cold. I see I was right to have his damnable mouth fused shut before I executed him. Upon returning to the palace, the Padishah Emperor had sequestered himself. Outside the grounds, Sardaukar tried to keep order in the face of numerous demonstrations. Some demanded that Shaddam abdicate, which might have been a viable solution if he'd had an acceptable male heir. As it was, his 11-year-old daughter Irulan had already received numerous marriage proposals from the heads of powerful houses. Shaddam wanted to kill all the suitors, perhaps his daughters too. At least he didn't have to worry about his wife anymore. Following their numerous military embarrassments, even the once loyal Sardaukar were upset with him, and Supreme Bashar Zum Garon had lodged a formal complaint. Garon's son had died in the Ixian debacle, but even worse in the old Bashar's estimation, the imperial soldiers had been betrayed. Not defeated, but betrayed. This was an important distinction in his mind, for the Sardaukar had never in their long history tasted defeat. Garon demanded that this potential blemish be formally erased from the record. He also wanted a posthumous commendation for his son. Shaddam didn't know how to deal with it all. Under other circumstances, he would never have given this pathetic and now self-important Ixian diplomat a moment of his time. But Ambassador Pilru still had his damnable connections and was riding the wave of Romber's victory. Feeling strong again after all the years of abuse and neglect, Pilru dropped a hard sheet of Redulian crystal in front of Shaddam's frowning face. It was most unfortunate, sire, that you did not have the opportunity to perform a thorough genetic analysis on Tyros Repha, if only to disprove his claim that he was also a member of House Carino. Many members of the Landsrat, indeed many noblemen of the Imperium, questioned this. He tapped the data on the crystal sheet, which Shaddam no doubt found incomprehensible. Pilru had been ignored, insulted, and dismissed for decades. But now that would change. He would make certain that the Emperor paid reparations to the Ixian people, and that he offered no resistance to the restoration of Vernius' rule. Luckily, I was able to obtain samples from Repha in his prison cell. Pilru smiled. As you can see, this is incontrovertible genetic proof that Tyros Repha was indeed a son of Emperor Elrud IX. You signed your own brother's death warrant. Half-brother, Shaddam snapped. I could easily arrange to have his recording and the test results distributed quietly among the members of the Landsrat, sire, Ambassador Pilru said, holding up the crystal sheet. I'm afraid the fate of your half-brother wouldn't remain quiet for long. He had, of course, removed all details of the mother's identity from the test results. No one needed to know the bastard's connection to the long-dead Lady Shando Vernius. Romber had the secret,
and that was enough.
Your threat is all too clear, Ambassador.
Shaddam's eyes burned bright through the shadows of defeat that had settled around him.
Now, what do you want of me?
While Shaddam waited in his private receiving hall for the arguments and proceedings to begin, he had very few moments of pleasure. Now he understood why his old father had felt the need to drink so much spice beer. Even Count Fenring, his companion in misery, could not cheer him up, with so many political millstones around the imperial neck. However, an emperor could also make others miserable. Fenring paced beside him, fidgeting and full of feral energy. All doors except the main entrance had been sealed, all witnesses removed. Even the guards had been instructed to wait in the halls.
Shaddam was eager.
They will be here any moment, Hasimir.
It still seems a bit childish,
But gratifying, and don't pretend to disagree, he sniffed. Besides, it is the privilege of being an emperor.
Enjoy it while you can, Fenring murmured, then turned away from Shaddam's glare.
They both watched the double bronze doors, which guards swung open slowly. Sardaukar soldiers brought in a familiar, awful-looking machine with a good deal of clanking, creaking, and clattering. Hidden cutter blades whirred inside the monstrosity, and sparks crackled from circuit ports. Years ago, Tleilaxu prosecutors had brought the horrible execution device to Leto Atreides' trial by forfeiture, hoping to vivisect him with it, draining his blood and slicing open his tissues to take numerous genetic samples. Shaddam had always thought the machine had a great deal of potential.
Fenring looked at it, pursing his lips in contemplation. A device designed only to maim, to hurt, to exert pain. If you ask me, Shaddam, it is clearly a machine with a human mind. Perhaps it is a violation of the Butlerian Jihad.
I am not amused, Hasimir. Behind the machine marched six captive Tleilaxu masters, shirtless because of their well-known tendency to conceal weapons in their sleeves. These were the Tleilaxu representatives who had come to the imperial court in recent months, held here after the failure of Project Amal. Before word could get out about Ajitika's demise, Shaddam had ordered their capture and detention. Count Fenring himself held a deep grudge, suspecting that at least one of these Tleilaxu was a face dancer, a shapeshifter who had mimicked him in order to deliver a falsely optimistic report about the success of the artificial spice. It had only been a delaying tactic by Ajitika to forestall imperial retaliation long enough for the master researcher to escape, but it had failed. For his part, Shaddam didn't look at any of the captives as individuals, and, indeed, the gnomish men all appeared very much alike.
"Well," he shouted at them, "stand by your machine. Don't tell me you aren't aware of its purpose."
With despondent expressions, the captive Tleilaxu masters took up positions around the diabolical-looking device.
"You, Tleilaxu, have caused me a great many problems. I am about to face the greatest crisis in my reign, and I think you all should shoulder some of the blame."
He looked at their faces.
"Choose one among you, so that I can see this device in operation, and after the demonstration, the rest of you will dismantle it right here."
Guards stepped forward holding hand tools. The glowering, gray-skinned men looked at each other, remaining silent. Finally, one man reached forward to activate the power source on the angular plates of the execution machine. The cumbersome contraption surged to life with a roar that startled the emperor and the guards. Fenring merely nodded, realizing that half of the effectiveness of this machine was its ominous nature.
"It seems they are having trouble choosing,
"We have chosen," one of the Tleilaxu announced. Without a word or gesture,
The six Tlaloxu masters all climbed up and jumped into a hopper on top of the execution contraption. They tumbled inside, throwing themselves into the embrace of the choppers, cutters, and slicers. As a final malicious joke, gouts of blood, fragments of flesh, and small pieces of bone sprayed the Emperor and Fenring. The Sardaukar scrambled away. Shaddam spluttered and grabbed for a cape to wipe the gore off of himself. Fenring did not seem terribly put off as he smeared a gobbet away from his eyes. The vivisection machine continued to cough and grind. The Tlaloxu had made no screams, no outcries. "I believe that takes care of the face dancer question," the Emperor announced in a not quite satisfied tone. Truth often carries with it the inherent necessity for change. The most common expression, when real change enforces itself, is the plaintive cry, "Why didn't anyone warn us?" Truly, they do not hear, or hearing, do not choose to remember. Reverend Mother Harishka, Collected Speeches. After weeks of turmoil, the shock waves of uncovered plots and tangled secrets still swept across Kaitain. All that remained was for the last few fires to be put out, the political fallout assessed, favors exchanged, and debts called in. Impressively attired in the old Duke ceremonial red uniform, with buttons and medals gleaming, Leto Atreides sat on an elevated platform at the center of the Hall of Oratory. This historic meeting would be part censure, part inquisition, and part bargaining session. Emperor Shaddam Corino faced the room alone. On the platform beside Leto sat six guild representatives and an equal number of Landsrad noblemen, including the newly restored Prince Romber. The banners of great houses were draped all around, an array of crests and colors like rainbows after a storm, including the purple and copper of Vernius.